available to your ears.
Blunt force trauma!
It'll run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Your nightmare's almost over there, Maz.
What's my nightmare?
This place.
Oh, God, yeah, we're out of the mall soon. Finally.
Last day.
I feel like a trapped rat.
Last day before we get to the weekend in Super Bowl 52 in earnest. Big Jim Murray and Maz alongside. We're here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, FM dial in Boston, simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. We have some guests. We have a lot of sound to play from you, especially from the two Bills special last night on ESPN. But we'll still be taking your calls all day long as if it were an agenda-free Friday. Our presenting sponsor this week is Harbor One Bank. Our hourly sponsor to lead us off today is Jeff Carbone Insurance, and I just want to let you know again that because it's an agenda-free Friday, we are brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Why drive when you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home? Visit skineshoba.com. Why don't we do some opening thoughts, Maz, before we talk to the people?
I'm all for it.
So 617-779-0985. Jimmy, you can release the hounds if we get calls in this first segment, and they're ready to go. We'll go to them. But first, again, opening thoughts. Go ahead.
Okay, so since it's a Super Bowl edition of Agenda Free Friday, I'm assuming we're all going to stay football. That's the rule today, right?
You can do whatever you want.
Well, we're staying football.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're staying football. So here's where I am. You all know how I feel about this particular game. And so, Murray, let me ask you a question. In 2007, who was the quarterback of the Giants?
Eli Manning.
Was he any good?
No, not particularly.
Thank you. Stop there. No, he wasn't. He wasn't any good, and they won the game, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
They won the game, 17-14. Yeah. And I went and looked it up today. Eli Manning in 2007 had a passer rating of 73.9. He threw 20 interceptions, the most in the league. Eli Manning wasn't even an average quarterback in 2007, and the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. The Patriots, a Patriots team, by the way, that was better than this one and had a better defense than this one, they won the game. So, I know it's easy to pick on Nick Foles because he's a bum, and he's a backup, and he's an average player, blah, 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 blah. I'm telling you, and we've talked about this in the past, there are plenty of teams that have beaten the Patriots with something less than a stellar quarterback. And given the number of options this kid has, or this guy has, Foles, at his disposal in the game on Sunday, I think that there is enough there for him to be able to beat the Patriots and for Philly to beat the Patriots because they have the defense. So there. Dump all over the quarterback if you want. He's better than what Eli was in 2007. Think about it. Look it up.
Okay. So suck on that opening take, Boston.
Do you want to add a E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles and flap your wings, too, after that opening
statement? No, I do have an affection to the NFC teams that are related to birds, though, Murray, as you are rapidly learning.
How does that one taste, Boston? Okay, what do you got, Murray?
I'm still oddly comfortable about this game, and I don't believe in Nick Foles. He is going to be the biggest detriment to this Eagles team on Sunday. I think their defense is widely overrated, and the other thing is this. And one of the other reasons I'm extremely confident about a Patriots, not just win, but a blowout on Sunday. Of all the things that Tom Brady has accomplished, one of the things he hasn't, one of the last things that he has left to do, is a blowout in the Super Bowl. The man's due. I really feel confident about that. I'm going with my gut on this. This is the time the Patriots are finally, in the Belichick-Brady era, they're getting a blowout on Sunday. And then finally, Brady can check that one off, too, off the list. And it's about the Eagles' D, Foles, and Brady finally getting a blowout in the Super Bowl.
Okay. My game take is that the biggest detriment to the Eagles will not be Foles. It will be Doug Peterson. That will be the person we will be talking about, or Jim Schwartz. It'll be the coaches. We will be talking about the Eagles' coaches after this game, just like we were talking about the Seahawks' coaches and the Falcons' coaches, and that's where it's gonna rest, and that's how the Pats are going to win this game. That's my game take. My opening take for the Agenda Free Friday, brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area, was the fabulous Two Bills documentary that aired last night for everyone to see. The media has, you know, been on it for a while. We've seen advanced copies, but you all got to see it. And so we get to really delve into it and discuss it. And I thought the thing was just tremendous. I thought it was tremendous work. And there's two things that stand out. I thought there were a couple of subliminal things that, well, first of all, I think the person that came off the best, that I enjoyed the most in the whole thing, was Robert Kraft. I thought he was terrific. I thought Robert didn't kiss the ass of Parcells. He didn't kiss the ass of Belichick. He didn't give us, you know, Robert is prone to, I think, hyperbole and sort of flowery, frou-frou sort of stuff. He gave us none of that. You know, he had several lines in there where, you know, like one of my favorites was, can you imagine managing these two guys?
It was a great line.
You know, like on both of them, like, can you believe I had to put up with both of these guys? You know, which, so, and I just think he didn't sugarcoat the Parcells thing. He didn't go overboard on Bell. I thought Parcells, I thought Kraft was the best in the whole thing. So Kraft I liked the best. But two other things tonight. I thought Kraft gave some subliminal comments that can be related to today's situation with the team. And secondly, my main takeaway from it is, again, just how deferential Bill Belichick remains to Parcells and how much I feel like he sort of kisses his ass and Parcells treats him like the little brother and how Bill just sort of sits there and takes it still. And it sort of bugs me a little bit because I think Parcells was in the wrong through most of it. And not that Belichick was 100% right. I'm just telling you, I think Parcells did more things wrong than Belichick did. And I think Belichick has proven himself to be a much bigger figure and a much better coach. And I just don't feel like even today that Parcells acknowledges those things or that Belichick pushes those things. It just sort of strikes me. So I'm just going to play you two examples. One from a little bit in the past and one from recently that just sort of shows its deferential nature. Here, the first cut I'm going to play is when Parcells left the Giants and became a broadcaster for a couple of years. And he went to interview Belichick. And if you're watching on the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston, that when I say Parcells interviews Belichick, that's in air quotes. Because Parcells cannot be lowered to be the media guy here in this situation and actually subjugate himself and ask Belichick questions. You see this all the time. Like former coaches and players become media guys and then they go interview people that they worked with or played with. And they sit there and they interview the guy. Parcells couldn't be bothered. And what you're going to hear in the background here is Belichick chewing ice, which is another classic Belichickism. Instead of sucking on a fruit salad, he's chewing ice. So that's the thing that you're hearing in the background. But listen to Parcells interview Belichick. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, you came to Cleveland and did one of our games, and we were on a TV, you know, like the Browns TV show together or whatever.
Somebody going to ask me a question, or am I just supposed to, am I supposed to sing?
Yeah.
Oh, is he interviewing me?
Well, we don't know yet.
We're just talking. We're not. Just, there's no interview.
The word in TV, now that I'm an expert on TV, is be conversational. Bill seems to be wearing the same stuff that he wore. In fact, did you dye that stuff and just bring it with you from the Giants, or is that Cleveland issue?
Yeah, I took that blue stuff and made it brown. Looks pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah, I noticed you custom tailored it, too, huh? A couple slices, that's good.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good, pretty good. How about you as to showbiz?
It's stranger up there in the press box for me because I can't recall being up there. It's been so many years
and
I haven't watched the game from up there.
Do you miss the coaching at all?
Oh, God.
I miss the...
Okay, so that's
enough. I think I miss a little...
That's the point.
Totally.
Huh. How showbiz, Bill? Do you miss... Parcells is there with NBC to interview Belichick? And all Parcells can do is bust his balls about what he's wearing. Would just take that from the Giants and dye it brown? You still look like a slob. And Belichick's like, hi, Bill. How you doing? Do you miss coaching? Like, God. You know, and so Parcells is just such a pud to Belichick, I think. It just, again, treats him like that little brother. And Belichick just sort of takes it.
Okay, but in that one, you understand why.
No, I don't.
Because Belichick had just become a head coach. And listen, I made the same observation as someone when we saw this thing a week ago. I said, what a telling scene that is, that the whole thing flips. But at that time, Belichick was just starting. He hadn't accomplished anything. Parcells was still his mentor.
Parcells is supposed to be the media guy. Belichick's the subject. Parcells is supposed to go there and ask him questions and interview him because Bill Parcells is out. Bill Belichick is in.
See, I still think that's more of a reflection on Parcells than Belichick. But go.
I think it's both. I think that's how Parcells has always treated Belichick, and I think Belichick's always sort of taken it, even after Belichick has proven himself to be the greater coach and the bigger figure and all of this. And so now I'll just go to the very end, where the documentary goes through all of the Jet stuff and all of the back and forth and all of the stuff that Parcells did to Belichick, you know, from... Like, Parcells could have told him he was leaving the Giants, and really Belichick should have been the next Giants coach, and Parcells didn't let him know in time. And then when they went to the Jets, Parcells shoved him out there to be the Jets coach first on the way in and the Jets coach on the way out and sort of porked him on both sides. And so all these porkings after, you know, Parcells dinks around with Belichick with the Giants. He dinks around with Belichick with the Jets. He dinks around with Belichick at the end of the Jets. It comes time to those two sit down. It's time to sort of apologize and say, this is where I was wrong, and now we've moved on. One of them does it. And one of them does, and one of them doesn't. Guess which one does, and guess which one doesn't. Play that second cut, Jimmy.
Yeah, I would say from my standpoint, I wish that I had just
gone directly to you and just talked, just cleared the air on it. And if we agree to disagree, that's fine. But and so there's all, you know, more silence than there needed to be, and that led to, you know, who's thinking what or who's doing what. It could have been handled more directly on my end at a couple of different points, one with the Jets, and then in subsequent years after that. So I certainly, you know, take my share of the responsibility in the relationship at that point. I could have done a better job.
Silence.
I mean, it's just football, you know, but still it's something that we did together for a long time. And I wouldn't say that I was comfortable during that time. But, you know, I think both of us move on from things. You know, that's what we're trained to do. It was just something that, as he said, we had a little disagreement. And it resolved itself. I'm happy that it has. I'm not speaking for him. So I think he is, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so am I, Bill. Yeah. I'm happy it's resolved, but did you hear anything close to an admission of any wrongdoing?
No. So, but I think at points he did do that. But in this cut, no. And look, the other thing is when you hear the answers.
Not with Belichick, he didn't. He admitted to something with Kraft that we'll get to later.
Oh, okay, so that's right.
But when it relates to Belichick and Parcells, Parcells didn't give him a sniff in this thing.
So the other thing I found interesting about that answer, and look, I went through and rewatched this thing a second time in parts, not from beginning to end, is that when the question is asked, Belichick directs his answer to Parcells.
He looks right at him.
He says, I could have handled it differently with you, or something to that effect. Parcells answers the interviewer.
And then it comes to Parcells' turn. First of all, he sits there and does nothing, sucking on his teeth. And then he answers Ken or whoever the documentarian is, and doesn't even address Bill and says, you know, basically when Bell says, I share my responsibility, I wasn't more open, I should have come to you, and I definitely bear that responsibility. Parcells says, yeah, I wasn't that comfortable with what was going on at the time. We had a disagreement, though, and we move on. Like, and again, the whole documentary details all the times Parcells porked Belichick. And even after all these years, Parcells can't bring himself.
Well, part of his non-answer there is, oh, yeah, it's just football. You mean the thing that's been the most important thing to you in your entire life, and now this time, when you should probably cop to some wrongdoing, you just say, it's just football. He's such a narcissistic DB.
Oh, my
I mean, that's
God.
Part of his charm, but boy, he just cannot admit any kind of wrongdoing. Never could.
Oh, God, and it's so striking how Belichick subjugates himself to Parcells then and even now, even after history has played out and what one became and what the other became and how it all, now we all with perspective can look at what happened. Parcells is still giving Belichick the ass. He's still just sticking his ass in the guy's face, and Belichick takes it. And then that, to me, is what stood out in that whole thing.
His 75-year-old ass.
So we'll get to your thoughts at Gender Free Friday, off and running.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz. We want to appeal to your ears.
Blood force drum! It'll run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, you guys want to get a water ice? I don't know if I'm in the mood for a hoagie or a whiz wit. E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
Live from Radio Row, Felger and Maz present the Philadelphian of the Day.
All right, part five of our five-part series, the Philadelphia Eagles perspective. I still haven't heard one person from Philadelphia or anywhere ever actually say water ice, but Murray's still going with it.
They do. Right? We call them slushies. You guys call them water
ice. Okay, Paul Domowicz writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. He joins us now on the Big Y world-class market guest chair. Who orders a slushie in the first place?
Who orders a what?
Slushie or
water ice.
Water ice.
People who like a treat on a hot day, Mike?
Yeah, it kind of gets warm there. Doesn't it get warm in New England?
Yes, I guess.
Okay.
All right, Paul, what do you think about this week? Most of the Philadelphia people we spoke to seem to like the Eagles. Do you?
Yeah, oddly enough, I do. I picked them to lose both of their first two playoff games, and then I looked at the matchups of this game, and I like a lot of them. I realize Nick Foles is, not your idea of a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, but I think this moment won't be too big for him. I think it's going to be a game that's going to go down to the wire, but I picked the Eagles.
So what matchups do you like?
I think they're going to be able to get pressure on Brady with their defensive tackles. Assuming, Jernigan's been sick. But he and Fletcher Cox, I mean, that's going to be the key, always has been with Tom, is to try to get some inside push on him and take away that step up. I think they can do that. I realize New England has a very good offensive line, but I like that matchup. I like Patrick Robinson against Amendola. I mean, I give Amendola the edge, obviously, but Patrick Robinson's had a heck of a year since they moved him inside, and I think he's going to play him pretty tough. So, I mean, those are two defensive matchups that I like against Brady and the bunch.
Any on the other side?
On the other side, the offense, their offensive line is playing really well right now. They've been using a lot of those RPOs with Foles. They used them with Carson, but it's been causing defenses problems. They can run the ball with Ajayi. Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz, their tight end, are going to be tough matchups for the Patriots defense, which hasn't played particularly well against the pass.
Where do you think people? I blanked. Go.
Yeah, Paul Tomlin.
Happens to be a lot.
Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. Give me your thoughts about Doug Peterson this week and how he's handled himself, and are there any tells about what's he gonna bring on Sunday?
He's impressed me a lot here. He hasn't changed who he is. He's been seems to be very calm in his press conferences. He knows a lot of people think he's in over his head. Doesn't seem to bother him. He's got this team reacting well to him. They're loose, and it's because of him. He's been impressive. The thing that he's done very well this season, and particularly down the stretch, has been his play calling. I mean, he's not predictable. He's kept teams off balance. Against Atlanta in their first playoff game, he dinked and dunked. Comes out against Minnesota, the best defense in the league probably, and throws downfield. Foles ends up going 4 for 5 on deep balls, including 2 touchdown passes. So they're going to keep New England off balance. It's going to be a great matchup because, I mean, there's nobody better at in-game adjustments than Bill Belichick. So it's going to be fun watching them get stopped, see how they react to what Belichick does. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup.
Does it concern you at all that the commentary on Peterson has sort of flipped in 12 months? I mean, like, what were you writing going into the year? Wasn't he on thin ice? Like, wasn't he about to be fired, according to some people?
No, he wasn't going to get fired. There weren't a lot of people who thought that highly of him because of his background. I mean, he was a guy that, how many years ago was coaching high school ball?
Right, so, and now what?
Yeah.
4 or 5 months later, everyone has good total faith in him.
I wouldn't say total faith, but he's got him here in the Super Bowl, so it's hard to, to knock the job he's done. I mean,
from a Philly perspective, that would be, that's the number one. I question the coach even more than I question the quarterback. And I was just saying last segment and all week, when we, meaning the New England side, comes out of these Super Bowls, we're talking about Pete Carroll throwing on the goal line and, Kyle Shanahan or Dan Quinn throwing when they only need a field goal with 3 minutes left. It always seems to be a coaching decision looking at.
That's what it comes going to come down to Sunday. I mean, you've got Brady and Belichick on one side who have – this is old hat for them. And you got a quarterback and a head coach who are suddenly facing the biggest game of their lives. And how do they react to it? I mean, Foles has said all week that the key has been for him he stays in the moment. That's easy to say. It's another thing when you go out there on Sunday, look around and realize where you are and who's watching, and suddenly do you get stage fright? I don't think he will. I think he needs to start early. I think Doug Peterson needs to give him plays early that will be successful so he can kind of get in a groove. We'll see. I mean, that's going to be an important part.
So you mentioned Amendola a little while ago. Do you think Philly's going to play man?
They'll mix it up. Schwartz has mixed it up all year. I don't know what they'll play more of. Like I said, they've been a 50-50 team most of the year. I know they won't. I doubt they'll blitz much. He basically is unabashedly said, that everything starts with that front four. So, I mean, that's going to be the key for them. I mean, if they can get – it's not going to be necessary to count sacks. I mean, I don't think they're going to sack him a whole lot. But they've got to make Brady feel uncomfortable in that pocket. Hurry him on some throws. Not give him a chance to go downfield on Brooks. Another thing I'm interested to see is, Brady and Cooks, they throw those deep balls – during a game 3-4 times just to try and get a pass interference call. You know, the Eagles know that. I've talked to Jalen Mills, one of their corners. They know they got to get their head around. They got to make it. Yeah, and we're going to see how the officials do. They let him play, or are they going to call a lot of pass interference calls? So, you know, that's going to be another important part of this
so
game.
There are specific things about the Eagles that, you know, we've asked a number of people this week that I'd love to get definitive answers on. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are their linebackers any good?
Two of them are very good. They just don't have a lot of depth. Nigel Bradham should have made the Pro Bowl. He's an outstanding linebacker who's it's funny, he's kind of become a Brian Dawkins, who's part of their front office slash coaching staff, not exactly, but he's taken him under his wing and really, I mean, Nigel Bradham has taken another step in his development this year, and it's a lot of it has to do with Dawkins. Michael Kendricks makes mistakes, which is why he kind of was phased out 2 years ago. Has been playing well lately. I mean, that's a guy that is going to be a key on Sunday because you guys have three terrific pass catching running backs, and they have to stop them. They have to tackle and limit the yards after the catch. Michael is one of the most athletically gifted linebackers in this league, but sometimes he makes mistakes and he can't afford to make them on the biggest stage. So, and after those two, I mean, they're not going to play many three linebacker packages. What they will do is drop Malcolm Jenkins down from safety as kind of a quasi linebacker. So that, you know, but that's the answer to the linebacker question.
Okay, Paul Domowicz, Philadelphia Inquirer Daily News again. Quickly before I let you go, are you a Hall of Fame voter?
I am.
Okay, so we got Ty Law up this weekend. What do you think his chances are?
I mean, I believe he's a Hall of Fame. He's Hall of Fame worthy.
So you vote for him?
I will. Initially, we'll have to see. I mean, there are about 10 players in there I feel are Hall of Fame worthy out of 15, including Dawkins. We're going to have to see how that first cut goes. I voted for Ty Law both times last year, down 10 and the second vote. So, I mean, yeah, in short, he's Hall of Fame worthy.
What do you think his chances are this year? How close? It's very cloak and dagger with the way you guys do it. Are you allowed to tell me how close he got?
Well, I think he made the first. I mean, we have a vote down to 10, and I'm pretty sure he made the vote down to 10 last year with Lynch and Dawkins and the five guys that went in, and I forget who the other two were. But, you know, this year is really confusing from the standpoint. You got three wide receivers in there this year. Randy Moss belongs in, obviously, but he and T.O. and the whole behavior question are going to throw this into chaos. You got a ton of offensive linemen that are splitting votes.
Where are you on Moss?
I believe he should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's getting my vote.
T.O.?
I've been pretty adamant that, you know, I mean,
because unlike baseball, we don't care about knuckleheads.
Exactly. Yeah. you know, the problem there is they've drawn a line and said, we can't consider character like baseball, but you can consider locker room behavior and the effect it had. And that was kind of the out a lot of people took with T.O. They say, you know, he was a cancer and teams couldn't wait to get rid of him. He was a disruptive player at times. He also has numbers like Randy that are just unquestionably Hall of Fame worthy.
Okay, again, Paul, thanks so much for coming by. We really do appreciate
it. Thanks, guys.
Okay,
Paul,
appreciate it.
Good luck this weekend. Here's an update from Murray, and they're back with more.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thanks for ending your workday with Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com.
What do you consider him?
You know, friend, mentor, competitor.
Enemy.
Competitor, yeah.
Remember those stats we used to run? Parcells with Belichick, without Belichick?
Yes.
There was a time those were important to Belichick. There was a time. You know, that was during, the falling out after the Jets, and Belichick's trying to carve his own niche outside of Parcells' ample shadow that I think Bill really wanted to get the better of him and to... And those records that they used to flash on game telecasts and we used to focus on were important to Bill Belichick. I don't know about now that he's just so resoundingly won that, but there was a time that was really important to him. So I'm glad he admits that they were competitors for a while.
I mean, they should be important to him. And again, Belichick's been to 11 Super Bowls. 11! Again, when you add up the stints as defensive coordinator of the Giants and assistant head coach of the Patriots when they went in 96... He's been to 11 Super Bowls in the last 32 years.
And what strikes me again is that Parcells still treats him like the sub-assistant picking up the guys at the airport and getting coffee.
It is interesting, though, that those numbers mean something to Belichick. The way that, Belichick's numbers with and without Brady might mean something to Brady. Like,
or interesting to all of them.
Right. Yes. Of course, there's a hole in every resume, I'm telling you.
Okay, your calls again on Agenda Free Friday brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Hi, Dan in the car. What do you got for us?
Hey, stay warm out there, guys. I'm worried about you.
Okay, babe, we're good.
So, hey, a couple of observations from that fantastic documentary last night that I thought were worthwhile. One of which I think you just touched on, and I think it ties to the present situation currently with Belichick, Kraft, and Brady. I was taken back, and I think I knew to the extent that Belichick is incredibly observational, has memory, and learns from things to the point where he was referring to the score and the number of yards that a running back rushed for in a game that he went to when Bill coached at the Air Force Academy when he was assistant in Colorado.
Right.
You know, and the documentarian did a great job of cross-referencing that and actually showing that he was dead on to that. But
it was Eddie Lee Ivory from Wake Forest, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and so it was particularly impressive, though, when you sort of saw the things and how Belichick used information and he uses his learnings and he processes everything as he's gone through in his career. And one of the things that I thought that was really interesting is if you look at the overly emotional and rash decisions that both Parcells and Belichick made, specifically in relation to Bob Kraft, over a period of time and Leon Hess and the Jets and things of that nature, it was sort of interesting. And I kind of extrapolated that to this modern-day ESPN.
So, Dan?
Yes.
We're kind of running out of time. Can I sit on those rash decisions things that you just pointed to? And thank you for the call. Yes. Parcells storming out of New England. Parcells storming out of the Jets. Parcells abruptly resigning from the Jets to make Bill the next head coach. Bill abruptly resigning. It's so true when you look back, and this is one of the things that have struck me. And Kraft said it again at one point in that thing last night. He said it to Andrea Kramer the other day, and he's been using this phrase, cool it. And he said last night, and I think it was in relation to the Dom Capers thing, but he said sometimes it's important just to cool it and see what happens. And I think that he is directly relating that to what happened this year with Belichick and Garoppolo and that thing, which is let's not go flipping over tables. Let's not go, you know, demanding trades and threatening to coach the Giants. Just cooling. Everybody just cooling. And I don't know. That's how I sort of tie all this together. Because I've heard Bill say that. I've heard Robert Kraft say that a couple different times in the last, you know, in this two Bills thing and with Andrea Kramer the other day. And I think it's related.
Well, look, I mean, he lived through it. He went through it once. He's 20 years older now. You know, it's funny when you see Kraft in that piece last night. And the video of him from 20 years ago when he was going through the whole Parcells stuff, there's a lot more edge to him. You know, that and obviously he was 20 years younger, but now he's experienced another 20 years. He's won a lot. Like, he should have the capacity to say, hey, fellas, slow down. This is not the end of the world here.
Just cool it. So, Parcells, you didn't get, so we drafted Terry Glenn. All right, yep, I know that doesn't sit well with you. Just chill. Just cool it.
Yeah, make a rash emotional decision. And part of that to Belichick could be, okay, I know we had to trade your guy, but we also had to appease the greatest quarterback who ever lived who's still playing at a high level. Cool it.
But he also knows, again, because that comment to me, the one he made about, you know, can you imagine having to manage these two guys? Like, that was, whoa. Okay, he's putting Belichick in the same breath as Parcells there.
I love it.
In terms of pains in the asses to deal with.
Kraft came off the best in that whole thing, I thought. Josh in Acton on the game. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going? First-time caller. I think the coolest part of this is what Belichick has left to do is the three-peat, where he stopped 49ers from doing it. And maybe Belichick's deference is because the one thing he hasn't been able to do is create coaches like Parcells has. And just real quick, I'm a huge Bruins fan.
Okay, we're not going to do the Bruins right now. I'm sorry, Josh. I have to cut you off. The deferential is not that. He's not deferential because he hasn't won three straight or hasn't... He's deferential because that's how Belichick and Parcells' relationship started.
And it hasn't changed.
And it's never flipped. It's just never flipped, which is just insane. Like, Vince Lombardi was on whose staff at Army? Or was on... But at some point, Lombardi's Lombardi. And he's not kissing anyone's ass. And I still feel like Belichick still has that. He's looking up to Parcells, which is just weird. Which is just weird to me. Going back to the Niners never winning three straight... I forgot how the Giants won that Niners game, the NFC Championship game at San Francisco before the Bills game.
Oh, God, they beat the bag out of Montana.
Well, no, no. Roger Craig fumbled with 3 minutes left. Did you pay attention to, like, the
but even just still, I mean,
the clip that they showed? No, I think the Niners were up by one, and Roger Craig fumbled with, like, 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and Lawrence Taylor recovered, and they kicked the game-winning field goal. I mean, that's how they – I should have gone back and looked it up, but that's how they cut it in this documentary last night. I forgot how close they were on that game.
Well, it was, what, 15-13,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they kicked five field goals to win it.
So I think the Niners were up one, and Roger Craig fumbled with 3 minutes left.
I mean, but, and I don't remember the specific play in real time. I don't, you know, I remember the Giants going out there and winning, and I remember the talk about Belichick's defense, because that Niners offense, to hold them to 13 points at home in that game.
Well, they knocked out Montana, as you said, and Young came in at the end. But I'm telling you, so, like, the Belichick-Parcells legend was really that second championship, taking down the K-Gun offense and the
sure.
Buffalo. Well, the guy misses a 41-yard field goal to win that game, and you're even in the game because Roger Craig fumbles with 3 minutes left. It's like, boy, how those things turn. And Belichick has had quite a few of those. And there's, you know what? There's not enough. Well, another thing that struck me in that thing last night, there's not enough mention of Tom Brady and his role in this whole thing, and maybe the bounce of the ball. You know, Norwood missing that kick. Roger Craig fumbling. How that all would have changed. You know, just sort of not an acknowledgement of
good fortune?
Yes. You know, you got some breaks along the way, fellas. Long commercial-free segment is next. Don't go anywhere. Oh, wait.
Brady.
Hold on. We have a guest sitting down, Jimmy. I'm sorry. He's sitting down right now. So let's just do it right now. Join us now in the Big Y World-Class Market guest chair. It's Juju Smith-Schuster, receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who we thought we were going to see in the AFC Championship game. We're here in Boston. Juju, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, we thought we were going to see in the AFC Championship game. What the hell happened to you guys?
Man, dude, we dug a hole too deep for us to come out of, so.
Come on. So did you learn a lesson there for, you know, overlooking an opponent?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't overlook them.
You don't think?
No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, we came in, you know, we started off slow, and, you know, we kind of, you know, bit ourselves in the butt.
Okay, wasn't Le'Veon Bell tweeting at 1 in the morning about facing the Patriots and all this stuff? What was he up at 1 in the morning in the first place?
Oh, I don't know. He was probably making music, making beats.
Exactly my point. So he's up making beats at 1 a.m. before the game, talking about the next opponent. I mean, you don't think there was any element of looking past the Jaguars?
I mean, if you guys think Le'Veon did, then, I mean, it is what it is. It's out there. But I think for the overall team, I think we were – you know, pretty much focused, came together and play.
So how do you explain the early part of that game with Jacksonville then?
The early part of the game. I mean, we kind of forced, you know, certain plays, certain ways, and it kind of affected us. So I think in the long run, we learned from that. And we went into this game, you know, our second game, knowing that, you know, okay, we're going to have to, you know, throw the ball more. We have to run the ball more to get Le'Veon effective. But, I mean, what a great defense, so.
Do you feel that you missed the matchup that everyone wanted, that you wanted? You feel that you know, that you wanted New England and that, I don't know, you choked getting there? Or, I mean, I don't know exactly how to phrase that, but you came up short of where you should have been, which was, you know, in New England for that AFC title game.
Yeah, man. I mean, against New England, about 30 seconds left, you drive down, you apparently you score. You know, they call it a touchdown. You know, you have first place. The outcome of the game is that, you know, you play both games. I mean, possibly playing against Tennessee. I mean, there's so many outcomes of that. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs, but still, you know, for me, I think I've learned a lot. You know, it's tough to get to the playoffs, you know, and, you know, for me being a rookie, that's what I learned.
So what do you make of the call at the end of the game there with Jesse James and the touchdown? What was your initial reaction at the time, watching it on the scoreboard, watching the replay, and how do you feel about it now?
I'd say it's a touchdown. You know, I feel that, you know, even now, we still talk today in sports history that, is it a catch? And they're still talking about a rule. I mean, they talked about, you know, if the catch is this big and it's this thick and you can hear that sound, what is a catch? There should be one sentence that say if this is a catch, that's a catch. But
well, there is a sentence, and it says you have to maintain control all the way through the process of the catch, through the ground and all of that. He didn't do it, did he?
Yeah. So, I mean, looking at what the NFL says, I mean, it is what it is, and you live by it.
Okay. Do you want to see him change that rule?
I mean, at the end of the day, I would like to, but it's not my say.
Okay, so what do you think you have to do next year to get to where you should have been this year, which is against New England?
Well, first of all, we have to get Le'Veon Bell back on the team, you know, sign that contract. we have to, keep the guys that, we have now, and we just got to work harder.
So you don't look at anything about your approach and your mindset going into that game that maybe you need to learn from that as well?
As a team.
You think you had the right mindset as a team?
I feel like myself, we had the right mindset. I feel like the team had the right mindset. Me personally, I feel like we were totally fine going into this game.
Okay.
So looking at this game here on Sunday, do you have a pick for this game? Do you think there's a winner?
I just want to see a great game, honestly.
You're not going to give us a pick, huh?
No.
Well, okay, you're not going to give us a pick, but talk to us about the New England secondary. Where do you think their strengths are? Where do you think that the Eagles might be able to do something?
I think for the Eagles, I'm going to talk about the Eagles secondary and, their strengths. I think the Eagles secondary is going to have to play really, really strong. I think their front line has to bring a lot of pressure to Tom Brady. They cannot give him time. I think the biggest problem that what they're going to have to figure out is how to stop Gronk. And that's, again, even against us, Gronk had an amazing game. So I would say for them on their side of defense, New England, they're going to play a lot of man. And for the receivers for the Philadelphia Eagles, they have to get open. And that's what we did, and that's the outcome of the game.
Okay.
Real quick, I saw you tweet about LeBron James in a Steelers uniform.
Yep.
Are you just trying to be silly, or would you legitimately like to see LeBron in the NFL?
Legit see him in the NFL. I mean, if we're down in the red zone, we're throwing fades all day. Alley-oops, call it his way. So touchdowns, why not?
All right, Juju, thanks so much for joining us. You have something you want to mention real quick before you get out?
Yeah, man. Today I'm doing a lot of stuff with Panini today. I think it's great. I'm able to connect with a lot of people around the world, especially kids. I'm young. I'm 21. So I think it's amazing that, I'm excited to be a part of this, to be part of Super Bowl trading cards. They have it everywhere, so appreciate Panini for having us. I appreciate you guys, and thank you.
Okay, Juju, good luck to you going forward.
Thank you.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.